This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and today I'm speaking with Mara Clark, an abortion activist, founder of Abortion Support Network, mother and disabled woman. Welcome, Mara. It's so great to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So we've known each other on social media for about a year or so, and we've, you know, we've had various sort of conversations around termination for medical reasons and abortion and all of those sorts of conversations. And then I think recently, off the back of the Channel 4 documentary, we sort of coalesced in our collective frustration about it. Yeah. And so I'd really like your thoughts on, not necessarily about the documentary, but just this whole idea. I think where they fell down, where we can agree on, is having two presenters that were anti-choice.
Yeah, and also two presenters who were themselves disabled. It's sort of like when back in the day, they used to ask women who'd had abortions to debate abortion against an anti-abortion campaigner.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they had two disabled civilians, you know, presenting the show and asking professional, well, either people who've had abortions or had terminations for medical reason or perform abortions or help people with the decision-making process. And I don't know, I just, it would have felt for me very awkward. And it just, you know, where they had like the male presenter ask his parents if they would have aborted
him. I know.
Like, I mean,
it was a train crash, that stuff. Yeah.
You know, and I just find so much of the discourse around abortion for disability to be in no way grounded in the nuanced reality of living with disabilities or parenting somebody with disabilities. And that's one of the two places in which I get very cross.
Yeah. And so just to back up for listeners, if you haven't seen this documentary, this was put on, I think, in August sometime, and it was labeled as abortion disability, an impossible choice or a difficult decision, something like that was the sort of sub headline. And it had two presenters, as Mara said, both with disabilities themselves. They had one presenter, Ruben has Down syndrome, and they had Ruth with spina bifida. And as Mara said, they're civilians. They're not medically trained. They're not working in this field. They just have their opinions about abortion and they are disabled. So they had them go about asking questions to various different people, medical people, two women who had termination for medical reasons, one who had that, I believe it was for her own health, actually, more so than because there was a problem with the fetus. There was her health and the baby's health were both at risk, basically. And then another woman who had an abortion or TFMR for spina bifida. And so there was problems from the beginning. I think, and Mara and I agree that the problem is with presenters, really. That's where it was falling down from the beginning. And it missed that nuance. You know, somebody, when we were talking about it on social media, there was somebody who brought up, well, what about, you know, abortion for disabled women? I mean, if we say we can't have abortions, but I mean, and the premise was past 24 weeks. That was what they were looking at. So not no abortion at all. It was just no abortion past 24 weeks for babies with disabilities.
And the thing is they don't just say past 24 weeks. What they say is up till birth.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Yes, I've been having these debates about late term abortion. And I will hold my hand up. I was ignorant to that term. I heard that term and I started repeating it. And then I started doing work on this podcast. And I think it was Jane Fisher from ARC that said, yeah, that's an anti-choice phrase. You might not want to say that. Because it's this up to birth thing. It's this late term. It gives everybody this picture of.
Yeah. And so first of all, I just Googled it. The name of the show is Disability and Abortion, The Hardest Choice.
That's it. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. And not a very good presenter there. I didn't do my homework.
No, you're grand. That's me sounding Irish when I'm not. So I will give you a little I am a person with disabilities. Like I have a physical disability and I have some health issues, which classify me as a disabled person, but I never actually used to call myself a disabled person until I went to a couple workshops put on by a group at NUIG called Real Productive Justice. And they've done quite a bit of work around sexual and reproductive health for people with disabilities. The whole spectrum from sex education to parenting and pregnancy to determination of pregnancy. And it's been really eye-opening. But also my baby brother, who will be 48 in a few weeks, my baby brother, he is very severely learning disabled, but also he's very high functioning. So his highest functioning level is that of an 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. But he can't live independently. He can't drive a car. And when I was younger, I used to volunteer at a YMCA camp on Saturdays that was for special needs people, you know, but there would be like a 35-year-old man who needed diapers changed, you know, for instance. And a lot of people don't know this, but the incidence of divorce when there's children with disabilities is through the roof. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these children have like lots of additional needs. So it's not somebody who you can just leave with your older parents or with a babysitter. You know, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on a Saturday morning was sometimes the only respite that these parents had. Mm-hmm. And my issue with this whole conversation around abortion for disability is that it is almost always, always projected onto super high functioning people with disabilities. Ruben lives in his own apartment and has a girlfriend.
Yes. You know,
they also talked to Heidi Crowther, who has run a campaign in Parliament against abortion for disabilities. And I think at one point with one of the women who had a termination for spinal bifida, the presenter with spinal bifida was like, well, you know, look, I'm fine. How lucky for you.
Exactly.
But you really, it's, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda, and what if? And, you know, so the 35-year-old toddler from the camp that I worked at, he repeatedly broke his mother's arm.
Yeah.
Not because he meant to.
No, but because he's a grown man.
35-year-old has a tantrum.
Yeah.
You know, that is the reality. And I really, it makes me crazy. And I once did a debate when they were like, oh, people are aborting because they want perfect babies. And, you know, your baby could be a Paralympian. Well, sure.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that really upsets me is that, like, either you're pro-choice or you're not.
Yes. Yeah. There's not this, I'm pro-choice, but but in these situations, no.
You know, and there are definitely things around reproductive health that make me feel icky.
Yeah.
But as soon as we start talking about putting limits, then it's just a real slippery slope. And the thing about the time limit is you show me a time limit on abortion, like the Republic of Ireland, for instance, has abortion on request to 12 weeks. The number of people who contact us who are 12 weeks one, 12 weeks two, 12 weeks three.
Yeah.
You know, and also when we're talking about fetal indication, you know, these are almost always wanted pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And any time limit you put on termination for medical reason is a time limit you put on somebody's ability to get the most information they can get.
Absolutely. Which is what Jane from ARC made the point of. And I'm so glad. I mean, she's great at all that stuff.
I love
getting in the points, getting in the bits that are like, no, this is what this is. And this is why it's so important that we give more room here for this reason. And, you know, and it's the lack of the nuance in these discussions. It's the fact that people take it really personally. So people, as in anti-choice, or have some issues around, well, I'm pro-choice, but not for this, for, you know, reasons for disability. The child has disabilities or will be born with some form of disabilities. The thing is, you can't, and even you, Mara, when you sort of say, I would agree with you, there's certain things that you go, oh, but that's because if that was me in that situation, this is where I would pause for thought, or I may not have an abortion for that particular reason or whatever. And again, this is all kind of, you know, with projective thinking, because actually I'm not in that situation. I may never be in that situation, but it's, those are my personal choices. And that's what we're talking about here. And we can't project our personal choices into other people.
And also, nobody actually knows what they would do.
That's exactly it. It's like, I'm not there yet. I think this is what I might do, but I don't know until I'm there. And I've had lots of women message me and say, I was anti-abortion, and then I got pregnant, and then I got told there was something severely wrong with my baby, or I was very ill, you know, one or the two. And here I am, you know, I've had an abortion. It's really changed. It's really sort of opened my eyes.
Yeah, we had the, you know, we've had the same on the helpline also. You know, I was completely against abortion until.
Yeah.
Until my 14-year-old got pregnant. Mm-hmm. Until we found out our 4-year-old had leukemia and we need to focus on that and not on a new baby. Until my wife got cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, until someone I loved needed an abortion. And that's the thing. It's like you're pro-choice or you're not. And part of being pro-choice is the only person who gets to make that decision is the person who is pregnant. And that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing is, like, we're not saying that this is an easy decision. That's not like, or it might be feeling like it's the easy, if you're facing sort of something with your own health, your own, you know, your own life is at risk, you might sort of go, well, this is, I don't know. Some people might think that's the easy decision. I'm not going to put, so some people might, but other people might go, this was a heartbreaking decision I had to make. I was stuck. I can speak from it, from termination for medical reasons, where we say it's the no choice choice. You know, you sort of, you really struggle with that word choice because you feel like, oh, my choices have been taken away. I've sort of been left with this pile of really shitty decisions to make. And I don't want to make any of them. And here I am. I have to do something. I have to. You're sort of forced into the corner. So, you know, and I think that that's probably true in many cases, not just in termination for medical reasons. It could be for many reasons when people are facing that sort of decision where they're thinking, I'm pregnant and I'm not sure I want to be, for whatever that reason might be. And so I think, yeah, we get into sort of very black and white thinking, which again, this documentary was sort of doing. And they couldn't, you know, in 50 minutes, you can't go into the depth of this conversation with those two presenters. It was very difficult. You know, they came at it, they were taking it very personally. Ruth, towards the end, started to kind of go, she got upset and she went, I've been taking this personally and I'm sort of realizing it's not really about me. No, it's not about you. You're here. Nobody's saying that you shouldn't be here.
they asked me to do the show. And I didn't think I could do it without coming off as a bully.
Well, this is the problem. And I think those, I mean, it'd be great to speak to the two women who had the termination for medical reasons and find out how they feel about it. I'd love to be able to speak to them about it. I was worried about when I spoke to them about this program and being asked if I would be on it. I just came away and just thought, you know what? I'm not going to be able to talk about this without sounding like I'm defending myself.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything to defend. You know, I don't owe you anything. but it's really difficult to talk to people who might be having this question mark around, ooh, you know, so why did you make that decision? It's really hard to talk about it without it maybe sounding like you're justifying or defending.
Yeah.
I just thought, I don't know that I can do that. And I'm not sure that I don't want to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Jane is braver. Jane is braver than I am.
Well, she kind of, this is part of her job for us as TFMR parents. She really takes that protective stance, but I don't mean that in a kind of patronizing way. It's part of what she's remitted to do.
So for people who don't know, Jane Fisher runs an organization called ARC. It is a national British charity called Antenatal Results and Choices. And they provide support for people whose pregnancies have been diagnosed with something bad. And they offer counseling and they offer information about, you know, a diagnosis is just a diagnosis. So what Antenatal Results and Choices can do is they can tell you the full spectrum of what that diagnosis might mean, you know, the 0 to 100 in terms of what the reality will be. And they can also connect the people who are pregnant with people who have had children with those diagnoses and like really find out the reality. Again, like my brother is special needs and my mother died when I was 13 and my brother was 11 and I became my brother's mom. And let me tell you, there was not a lot of support. I mean, there was some support. There was a great program where we grew up, which was kind of like a big brother, big sister program. Mm-hmm. But for children with learning disabilities and other disabilities, and the people were paid. So they were trained and paid big brother, big sister. And that was like literally the only respite that the family got. But and also Gordy Horgan from Alliance for Choice in Derry has talked about how she parents a child with disabilities. And because of that child's caring needs, it made it not possible to have more children. You know, there's all the different sides. And there's also people who have disabilities who might want or need an abortion.
Yes. And that's what I was getting earlier. You know, so is there a clash? You know, I'm kind of going, I don't think there's a clash between believing in the right to choose to have an abortion and disability rights. Is there a clash? I don't know. Obviously, some people think there's a clash, but is there really? You know, because surely abortion rights are part of disability rights.
Yes. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There are plenty of ableist people out in the world. And I know that we've had service users the jurisdictions we hear from the most people from are the Republic of Ireland, Malta, and Poland. Mm-hmm. And in the Republic of Ireland, you can technically have an abortion for a fatal fetal indication if two doctors certify that the baby will 100% die within 28 days. Which is very, very hard to, you know,
they can't know that. I mean, that I know the doctors, but you know, unless it is literally,
let me get my crystal ball.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's so many things that cannot be.
And in Malta, there's no abortion, like not even to save a woman's life. Mm. And in Poland, population 37 million, and they used to do between 1 and 2,000. The state used to do between 1 and 2,000 abortions per year, and 98% of them, well, between 95% and 98% of them were for fetal abnormality, and they made that illegal.
That law. I remember hearing that on the radio. I can still vividly remember it coming through. We were driving and it coming on the radio and feeling physically sick.
So we, you know, I work with Abortion Support Network, and we're part of the coalition called Abortion Without Borders that was launched to help people in Poland. And suddenly we saw a much higher increase in people who were terminating for that reason. And absolutely, there have been times when people have said, you know, I do not want a disabled baby. But it's like people who say, if you didn't want to be pregnant, you should have been more responsible. And it's like, okay, so first of all, let's not assume that an unwanted pregnancy is because somebody didn't use birth control, because I can tell you every kind of birth control you can be on and still get pregnant. Sometimes two kinds of birth control and still get pregnant. We've had two women who were told they were sterilized, who still got pregnant.
Yeah.
But it's this sort of like, so you're saying she's not responsible enough to use birth control, but let's give her a baby.
Yeah.
Those take no responsibility at all. The fact of the matter is people generally know what they are and are not capable of doing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that statement of, I don't want a disabled baby, there may be lots of reasons why that is the case. And even if their reason isn't the reason that you like, who are we to be making that judgment choice for them? At that point of that, it's their lives and we don't have to agree and like everything that other people do and say.
Yeah. And also, again, either you're pro-choice.
Yeah, exactly. Or you're not. And that's kind of what I mean. It's like, I kind of have to release the balloons on some of it because it's not, it isn't my life that this is affecting. So I might not agree. I might agree or disagree, but it's not my choice. It's not my life. And I think there's also, which I thought was a really good point, the whole idea that, okay, woman's pregnant, she finds out there's a problem, that the baby is disabled in whatever way, and she decides she doesn't want to carry on with this pregnancy. We're going to tell her she must. So now a baby's brought into this world that is not wanted.
Yep.
And this parent or, you know, couple or who, you know, may or may not be able to look after them. And, you know, in their physical sense, but what? So we're going to bring human beings into this world that aren't wanted. What sort of psychological fucked up situation is that child going to be in? Whether or not they're able to cognitively know that, I believe, you know, it's just, it's nonsense. And it's cruel. It's cruel on everyone involved, including that baby. That's how I feel about it.
And let's talk to some of the parents who make up Parents for Choice in Ireland, yeah, who have children with disabilities or who themselves have disabilities. And let's ask them how much support there is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of our callers once said, again, was like, I never thought that I was pro-abortion, but we already have three kids and we just can't have another one. And people think all a baby needs is love. But let me tell you,
no, a baby needs a lot more than love.
Vaccinations.
I mean, love's important. We need that. But there's lots of other things that need to go on. And not everybody has that ability. And I mean, you spoke about, you know, your mom dying when you and your brother were very young. And I mean, I've spoken to women who have said, you know, I got the diagnosis of Down syndrome, for example. And I just thought, what will happen to this baby, this child, if we're no longer able to look after it? Because we die, because we get ill, because we get injured, what happens then? And I think, you know, to take this kind of, to look at it in a very black and white way and to kind of go, oh, well, you know, all you need to do is love this baby. And it's also really condescending. It's like saying that parents don't think about it, that they don't sort of think about the future. They do think about the future. And most people that I have spoken to have had some kind of thought process around how will this play out into the future. I did, you know, I was looking into everything that might be a possibility for Luna. And yeah, you know, it's an insult to say that parents don't think about it. They do. They think about it very hard.
Yeah. Yes, of course, there are some people who, for instance, never wanted children.
Yeah.
And then they get pregnant and they're like, nope.
Yeah.
But then you throw other stuff on top, like stigma and lack of service and everything else. But termination for medical reason or abortion for medical reason, you know, thank you, Chrissy Teigen. Mm. It is, again, these are mostly wanted pregnancies.
Yeah.
And in fact, we've had some situations where they've been in vitro pregnancies.
Yes. Yeah.
you know, like very wanting.
IVF adds another layer to this for sure.
And like expensive, you know. So people who've been trying for years, we had somebody not too long ago who it was her third in vitro termination for medical reason. And she's broken.
Yeah. The things that people go through, and this is where I sort of, the program sort of glosses over it. It just didn't have the time or the scope to be able to do it. But you mentioned Chrissy there, and also about the use of the word abortion. And I'm very sort of, it's since doing this podcast that I've sort of started talking about, thinking about the word abortion and what it means. And, you know, I hear from lots of women, you know, I did it recently again because of Chrissy Teigen and talking about abortion versus termination for medical reasons versus compassionate induction versus, you know, all these sorts of words and language around it. I mean, when I had Luna and I had my termination, you know, and I was thinking about Chrissy and how she kind of went, I didn't know that this is what it was. And I really get that. I really understand that because I'm sure I did on some level. I knew I must have done, but it so did not feel like that. And so the word abortion felt like, I can't. And I've always considered myself pro-choice, but it just was like, I can't go there with that word. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was using things like ended the pregnancy, that kind of thing. I knew I didn't want to call it a miscarriage because I've had miscarriages before and I went, this is not a miscarriage. But I really struggled at the beginning with finding the right words. And so, yeah, I really got it with Chrissy that's where she was at with it. So these words around abortion, termination, you know, thoughts?
So I'm pro-choice on what somebody wants to call their own experience.
Yes. Yes. I really like that. Yes.
So also there are a lot of places where when calling around looking for misoprostol or mifepristone or a mixture of both, nobody's talking about abortion. They're asking for help to bring their period down.
Okay.
You know, so it's, you know, I am like 150% pro-abortion, and I've been learning a lot, especially from the activists in Poland, about abortion stigma. And there's a group called InRoads, which is a global organization that is fighting abortion stigma. So I think where the issue comes, and we saw this a lot during the referendum, and also, for instance, a certain charity, which only became pro-choice in, I want to say, 2009. You know, their global framework was that they were pro-choice, they were pro-abortion in cases of rape, incest, risk to the life of the pregnant person, and fetal indication. Mm. And during the referendum, there was also a lot of like, let's bring out the hard cases.
And so this is what we're talking about. Hierarchy of abortion here.
Yes, good abortion and bad abortion and more deserving abortions.
Yeah.
And we at Abortion Support Network and also throughout Abortion Without Borders, we don't ask people how they got pregnant and we don't ask people why they want abortions because it's not our business. Our business, although we're a charity, is to remove any obstacles that exist between somebody and the abortion that they want or need. Mm. You know, and we also say wants or needs, right? Mm. Because you would not have said you wanted an abortion.
No, but exactly.
But you needed one.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you how to describe your experience. Mm. I just would hope that we live in a world that you're not calling it you're calling it a termination or a compassionate induction, because that's what it felt like to you, and not because you think there is anything shameful
exactly
about people who have abortions just because.
Yes, exactly. And that's where my head's been at. It's like, you can use whatever language you want. I have used lots of different language to describe. My language has evolved as I have evolved, and that's totally okay. It's your experience. It's your story. You describe however way it feels comfortable to you. I just hope that it's not coming from a place of shame and stigma. And of course, I think there probably is some of that in there. But yes, I think that's where it's sort of working towards, is use whatever language fits for you, but do it because it's what feels right for you, not for other people.
Indeed. And, you know, we don't have a hierarchy. It's interesting. We don't have a hierarchy, but we do have a hierarchy.
Well, this is it. You know, it's kind of like, so this is it though, isn't it? Because it comes back to that, trying to sort of, oh, well, I had my termination because, and you start justifying. It sounds like you're justifying, but it's so hard to separate that, to not feel like I'm justifying in some way. I don't have the answers, people. I'm not quite sure how not to sound like that. And because I worry that by saying, well, I had a termination for medical reasons because my daughter had Turner syndrome and she was very ill, that somehow that sounds like, well, then that's okay. And this is not what I'm saying, of course, but that it might be like, oh, well, but if you have an abortion because you're pregnant, you don't want to be for whatever other reason, you know, the baby's healthy, but it's another reason, that somehow that's different. You know what I mean? Is it different? Yep. Is, I guess, the question. Is there any difference?
Yes. So as someone who's been on the phone,
yeah,
talking to people having abortions for all kinds of reasons, people who are terminating for medical reasons are in a different headspace. And then in particular, people from Poland who up until a year and a bit ago could have that abortion in their home country and now have to, you know, be shunted abroad like criminals. And there's so much stigma around abortion. It's like Ireland was maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Is there stigma around abortion because of fetal anomaly in Poland? Is there that stigma, or is it just stigma around abortion? So did they talk about abortion for fetal abnormality in Poland, or did they keep silent about it?
I mean, that used to be the reason most abortions were done. And then
they talk about it though. So there was still the stigma.
Yeah, there's 100%. Yeah. There's 100% the stigma. I will say that it's really hard to parse out, but I think, you know, and also some people who are having abortions not for medical reasons, they wouldn't call it a choice. They would call it a necessity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would be, you know, for financial reasons, because of what's going on in their lives, because, you know, what they're able to handle. And so I think that until we have a society where anybody who wants a child, any kind of child, can have a child and not have to worry about rent and childcare and healthcare and all the sort of basic necessities that we need to live, that there will be people choosing, I'm putting in massive air quotes, deciding to have an abortion, not because they want to have an abortion. And, you know, as we know from the Turnaway study, something like 95% of women who have abortions don't regret it even years later. Many of the people who do talk about regretting, I think if you again look at the nuance, what they're regretting is the circumstances in life at the time that led them to decide to have an abortion.
It's not the abortion itself, it's the things that surround it, you know. And again, it's again a really nuanced conversation. It's so, you cannot have these, I mean, even us doing this podcast episode, you know, we could have an episode talking about this for probably, I don't
know, 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And we'd still be going around all the sort of the nitty gritty of it. And and it's so personal and every story is so different.
But not one of those people should have to. There's a British expression which I love, which is gutted. Like I was gutted. So nobody who has had or is considering or is going to have an abortion should need to gut themselves and spill their pain out for other people to pick over and judge.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just, it's not okay. And there's no circumstance in which it is okay. There is no circumstance in which other people should be able to decide whether or not you continue a pregnancy.
Yeah, and so we get into this sort of a little bit of a catch-22, because if we don't talk about it, how do we get to that point where we don't have to talk about it anymore?
I mean, it's funny because we have pretty much stopped putting press in touch with service users.
Yeah.
Because we don't think that one person's experience can speak for like...
No, absolutely not. Experience. Exactly.
And there is a team that we're working with right now on abortion in Poland. And they're like, okay, the thing is, we don't want somebody who had a fetal abnormality or a fetal diagnosis. And we don't want somebody who was pregnant because of rape. We just want like somebody who got pregnant and wanted an abortion. And we almost like got down on our knees and kissed their feet.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's most abortions is I got pregnant. I didn't want to be pregnant. So I decided to be not pregnant. Mm. And we tend to talk about like types of experience. Like one thing that I wanted to make sure to say on this podcast is there was a month earlier this year where we had 4 clients in the Republic of Ireland. All 4 had fetal indication. All 4 had been delayed. Oh, have one more test. Oh, we need to send your results to America. Oh, have one more test. All 4 of these people needed visas to travel.
Yeah.
And none of them were told unequivocally no to abortion in Ireland until they were over 24 weeks pregnant.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we had healthcare professionals from the Republic of Ireland calling Abortion Support Network, being like, well, she's very stressed and she needs an appointment right away. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Who caused the stress? I mean, we were able to help all 4 of them. Don't even ask me how or how long it took. But in one case, it took to get the visa, it took 10 weeks.
So Mara, in that case, do you think it was a willful, we're going to push them over the line because we don't believe that women should have the choice to have an abortion? Or do you think there was a, because I've also heard about, you know, clinicians being fearful about, you know, being prosecuted and, you know, losing their license. Is it a combination of those 2 things or other things?
In some cases, it is absolutely obstruction. Mm. So there was a period where we heard from several callers with fetal indication that the same language had been used with them around testing. So they were all told that you need to have more tests because you wouldn't be able to live with yourself if you had the abortion before you knew exactly what was wrong. And they were like, wait a minute, is the test going to show me that the baby is healthy? No. Is the test going to show me that the baby is unhealthy enough? Mm. That, you know, fatal enough?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
To have an abortion in Ireland? No, but you wouldn't be able to. Now that's obstruction.
Yeah.
You know, and also like really stretching it out, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And especially when people are going to need travel documents to not at least get that process going in tandem. But yes, also, of course, the criminalization of doctors that is written into the law makes healthcare professionals fearful, but also the pathway is rubbish.
Yeah.
It used to be, you need a termination for medical reason. You go over to Liverpool Women's, it's inpatient. You know, you get to stay in the hospital with your partner. Used to cost about £1,600 and now it's about £2,200. But Liverpool Women's stopped taking international clients, including Irish, for about 2 years and only started again, I think, in February of this year. Mm. Meanwhile, all of the maternity hospitals in Ireland were telling couples who had this, you know, people who'd been given a fatal diagnosis, oh, just go to Liverpool Women's and you'll be grand. And there were a few other hospitals in England, and there still are, where you can get this procedure, but it's outpatient, which means you have to stay in a hotel for most of the time. And then you go in, you take the first set of medication, you go back to the hotel. And then you go back in 2 days and take the second set of medication, and you stay in the hospital until delivery, because that is what a post 24 week termination is. It is giving birth to a dead baby. Yeah. So for anybody who thinks that somebody's just blissfully,
I think there's that as well. People don't understand what this all entails or can entail.
It's hellish.
Yeah.
It is not a pleasant experience. It's honestly, having been in labor for 72 hours myself, it's not a pleasant experience when you have a baby at the end of it, live baby. You know, again, no hierarchies, but the hospital abortions over here can cost at a minimum £3,700 plus travel, plus accommodation. And we are very fortunate that we have found a couple hospitals in Europe that will do post 24 week terminations for medical reason for non-residents for much less money. But there is this, I sometimes find that we get these calls from people in the healthcare system who really treat pregnant women like sort of helpless babies. You know, like, oh, they have to go to England because they don't speak the language in that, you know, godforsaken European country. Where, you know, most doctors speak English.
Yeah.
And also there's this thing, well, they have to be able to bring baby home, you know, and also sometimes people with fetal indication, if they're under 24 weeks, want to go into a clinic and have a surgical termination where they don't, you know, give birth. And we have seen people shamed for that.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, we've done a lot of talking about surgical versus medical termination, you know, the hierarchy within that. It can get quite, I mean, even within this community of termination for medical reason, you know, I'd like to think we're very open and accepting of each other, but that is what I've mostly seen, I'm going to say. And I think we're not immune to also kind of going, well, this is my experience, so therefore that must be what all experiences are like. You know, we're human, so we kind of go, well, this is my experience, so this must be what it's all like. So I think part of what I felt my job is to do with this podcast is to talk about different experiences around this, different types of procedures, different just the differences around it, so that we can all kind of understand that we have our own personal experience and then everybody else has their own personal experience of going through this. Going back to the sort of the talking about disability, talking about abortion, I mean, I'm really interested. So how did you get into this?
I read an article in the Village Voice.
Okay.
20 years ago, I was living in Sweden and I had a Swedish boyfriend. I think that's the law when you live abroad.
Okay.
And we had a broken condom, and I walked into the chemist and got the morning after pill, which you could not do in America at that time without a prescription.
Okay.
And that was in my head. And then when I went back to America, there was a front page piece in the Village Voice. There was a cartoon of heavily pregnant women parachuting over the Manhattan skyline.
And so this was an American paper, American.
Yeah. And I was The Village Voice was like the alternative newspaper. And it talked about how women from all over the Eastern Seaboard had to go to New York to get second trimester abortions because they'd find out they were pregnant, and then they'd be told how much an abortion cost. And then they would start raising the money. But then they started chasing the fee. So they would raise the money, they'd get further in the pregnancy, the abortion got more expensive. Yeah. And then they would run against the time limit because there's no universal time limit across the states. And eventually they would get told, oh, well, you could go to New York where it's 24 weeks as it is in England. But this was before Airbnb and before, I mean, most people did not have internet or computers or smartphones.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was this group of people, you know, it was a 2 to 3 day outpatient procedure. And there was a group of women putting these women up in their homes. And by homes, I mean tiny New York apartments. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What? But abortion's legal. And, you know, all of the recent kerfuffle about Roe, this was 20 years ago, and 87% of US counties did not have an abortion provider.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not anything new, really, is
nothing
it? This is not new. This is not a new story. This has been going on for a long time, and it's been conveniently forgotten about or just not talked about.
Unless, you know, you don't know until you know.
Well,
you
that
know.
Was the other part I was thinking. It's like until you were kind of in a situation where you needed, you know, needed the morning after pill and read this article, like it's the sort of the universe aligning or whatever. It's kind of, it's easy to be, I was like that. So before I've always been pro-choice, but until I really needed it, until I was in the situation, I didn't really understand what it means, you know, and what it is. And yeah, you don't know until you know.
Yeah. And for me, it was like, oh, people with money have options.
Yeah. Yes.
And people without money have babies. And this was this was almost before RU486, AKA the medical abortion pill. And even when we started, when Abortion Support Network started in the Republic of Ireland, we were hearing from women on both sides of the island, North and the Republic, of like really horrific things people were doing to self-terminate. Now, thank God there's pills, which are on the World Health Organization's, you know, list of essential medicines and are safer than both paracetamol and my personal favorite, Viagra. But it's any restriction of any abortion is always going to more severely negatively impact marginalized people or at-risk people or poor people. And that includes
or disabled people.
People with disabilities. Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, like for instance, if you need to travel to England for an abortion and you live in Galway, do you know the bus from Galway to Dublin Airport is not wheelchair accessible?
So this is the whole going back, you know, this thing about abortion rights and the ability to access safe, legal, free abortion wherever you are, whoever you are, is the most important part. I mean, so when you have people like Chrissy Teigen or other celebrities, you know, how important is it to have these voices that people sort of stand up and listen? Do they stand up and listen?
See, this is why I'm an abortion funder and not a campaigner.
Okay.
Sometimes people listen, but famous people shouldn't have to talk about their abortions.
I agree.
And women shouldn't have to die.
No.
You know, so Ireland lost at least one. Poland, I think we're up to 5 women who they've let die of sepsis.
Yeah.
Rather than give abortions. Malta almost killed an American tourist.
Remember seeing that.
Over the summer. You know, Italy. You know, it's...
Yeah. So you're speaking up, whether you're a celebrity, whether you're Chrissy Teigen or whether you're, you know, Joan Smith down the road. What is it to get out of these stories that helps? I mean, so, okay, Ireland had a very successful campaign to get, well, it is successful because it's more than what they had.
Yes.
But it's not enough. Which I know the Jen and Claire from TFMR Ireland would say the same. You know, they worked their bloody asses off, okay? Mm-hmm. And they, I think it's probably fair for me to say, they really ran themselves ragged with what they had to do. And, you know, is that right that they had to do that? No.
No. You know, but...
But if they hadn't done it...
I mean, it's interesting because the people from Termination for Medical Reason are actually the people who kicked off the campaign before the death of Savita Halappanavar.
Yeah.
Because Youth Defense put billboards across Ireland showing either a sad looking woman or a fetus.
Yeah.
And it says, abortion tears her life apart. There's always a better option or something. And suddenly, 3 or 4 women who had terminated for medical reason were like, wait.
Yeah.
Stop it. And they actually went on television.
Yeah.
And this was in 2012. They went on television and talked about terminating for medical reason. And during the campaign, especially in the end days of the campaign, it seemed like every event was focusing on termination for medical reason. And those are the people who are most screwed by the existing legislation.
Yes. And I'm also conscious of what you said earlier about, you know, you had somebody sort of saying, we don't want to talk about termination for medical reasons. We don't want to talk about in cases of rape. We just want to talk about, I needed an abortion. I had an abortion. Those stories. So, oh, I'm getting myself into a bit of a bit of a tangle here. So it's like, how do you sort of make sure, again, it's coming back to the whole thing about not placing a hierarchy, not saying, oh, well, it's okay in these cases.
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk about, you know, hierarchies and pro-choice and anti-choice and ableism and everything else, let's throw in some patriarchy. So the thing is that 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 women will have an abortion. Mm. And that's it. So how come we don't all talk about abortions? How come we don't talk about periods?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't tell you until you're pregnant.
Yeah.
That 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriage naturally.
Yeah.
And then they say, so don't tell anybody you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Until you're 12 weeks. Because if you have a miscarriage, now follow that through. If you have a miscarriage, we want to make sure there's no one there to support you.
Yeah. Is it just patriarchy, or is it Western thinking, Western culture? Because I've spoken to other people with other cultures who they go, that's crazy. Why wouldn't you tell people that you're pregnant? If this is a wanted pregnancy and you're pregnant and you're happy about it, why wouldn't you tell people that you're pregnant? And then we as a community are there and support you.
Right. No matter what happens.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's, I think you're right. There's patriarchy in there, and there's something cultural about Western society.
I can only speak to what I know as a cis white het woman, as a Western,
yeah.
You know.
No. I'm not having a go. I'm just wondering.
Oh,
I'm
no,
just,
I know you're
I'm
not.
Really curious about all those sorts of, yeah, again, complex, lots of different things going on. We have our own experience because of where we're at in the world and who we are.
It's, I think also the thing I was saying earlier where I was not public about being a person with disabilities. And that was because I thought I wasn't disabled enough.
Yeah.
And it was actually talking to somebody from Disabled Women Ireland that I realized that representation was important. Mm-hmm. And that there's no such thing as disabled enough, and that it was actually stigma and the fear of stigma. Mm. And also the feeling that like, oh, I'm not worthy, you know, because I only use a cane sometimes, you know, and because I can do most things that I want to do, although with less agility as I age. And I think this is, I'm trying to tie this in to the whole, you know, to the abortion thing. You shouldn't have to talk about your abortion, right? Just like you shouldn't have to talk about the sex you had last night or what you ate for breakfast or, you know, what you did in the bathroom. Like,
yeah,
I had to explain to my child at a young age that abortion is like nose picking and vaginas. There's nothing wrong with them, but they're private.
Yeah.
So that was how I instructed my, you know, year one student to not be talking about abortion on the playground. But like, you shouldn't have to, but why don't we?
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect place for us to end. Mm. You shouldn't have to, but why don't we?
Why don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that that's something, look, this is more for us to, and I mean us as in the listeners, everybody to kind of sit with that, you know, why don't we? Why don't you? And whatever your reasons are for why you don't, that's okay. But get curious about why don't you? I think that that could be a really, I don't know, a really powerful thing for everyone to do. That's my 2 cents. So Mara, what we do at the end of every episode is called TFMR Takeaways. It's sort of a little nugget of advice or whatever. And I guess I've I've put this down as, you know, what piece of advice would you give to anyone who might be feeling conflicted about having a termination for medical reasons in the context of disability rights?
I would tell them the same thing I would tell anybody having, considering a termination for any reason, which is that all any of us can do is to make the decision that feels the most right for ourselves in the context of our current life situation and circumstances. And I would strongly recommend that if somebody's considering termination for medical reason, that if they're in Ireland, they contact LMC support, which is lmcsupport.ie, which is the support arm of TFMR.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they could contact Antenatal Results and Choices in the UK, even if they're outside of the UK. And also to breathe.
Yeah.
And the beauty is there isn't a time limit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Currently.
So
you have time.
Yeah.
You have time to make a fully informed choice. But you've got to do you and whatever decision is right for you and your family and your life and your circumstances.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Mara. And I'll put all the references to the various organizations that you've mentioned and whatnot. We'll put that into the notes when the episode goes out. So yeah, thanks, Mara, so much for your time. It's been really good conversation. Really got my brain juices flowing, you know, first thing in the morning. So that's great.
Thanks for having me. It was it's rare that we have so much time to actually talk about the shades of gray.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you for providing both myself and other people with this space to have these conversations.
Yeah, no problem. Well, yeah, appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for listening, and we hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know by messaging us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. We've got lots planned this season, so don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on most major podcasting platforms. Subscribing means you can get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released. That's all for this time. Thank you, and please take gentle care of yourselves.